firstly, it's half past 10. No, not 25 past 10. May we suggest that we commence with our meeting in the interest of, for lack of a better word, transparency. Part of the delay we were having is that, firstly, one, there are a number of activities taking place in Parliament. I think Honorable Cheryl Dudley, what do I say, darling? Honorable Cheryl Dudley. Because she's always a godsend. Whenever we need rescuing, I know I can trace her anywhere and get her. She's busy with the IPU, what do you call it? Multi-Party Women's Caucus. Started early in the morning today. So she's on and off. So you may not find her coming there. She may leave at any given moment now. And Honorable Kalyan is also engaged with the IPU next door here. And there are a number of other apologies. The whip from the ANC was indicating to the chair. So, hence you are finding three members of the committee present, if you don't count the chair. Only three members. And we were putting our heads together, the four of us, whether we should proceed with the meeting or not, in view of the leanness of the meeting itself, as well as against the magnitude of the responsibility facing us. So we were still discussing that. We have not come to one conclusion around that. It was, as you know, we will have to be diligent around this particular process and ensure that at least all the processes are in place. We were supposed to be dealing today. We didn't have enough time to deal with the D7208 Tobacco Products Control Amendment Bill. But we had two items that sort of consumed a lot of our time. We had a strategic plan for the department as well as the tobacco product. And I think the chewing was quite big for our mouths. And by the time we're coming to the next agenda, we didn't have enough time to deliberate. So we... And the problem we are having, and I think I was conferring, okay, there's an additional member coming. Also engaged in the same activity of the Women's Caucus, I think. Yes, an apology we all understand. So we were supposed to be deliberating with the strategic plan and the tobacco product amendment bill. But may I make a proposal from the chair? One, I think firstly, in the light of the interest, one, of ensuring that I think also taking into account the input from the DG last time we met on Tuesday, that we may have enough time to further deliberate on the strategic plan and other related matters when we deal with the annual report in the ensuing period of the year. May I therefore suggest that we suspend that particular discussion, notwithstanding the fact that we have not had time to conclude all the questions we were actually posing to the department. That's the first proposal I want to make from the chair, so that we only deal with the Tobacco Product Control Amendment Bill today. I just want political party to advise the chair.
Chair, I agree with what you're saying. There's no point in carrying on with so few members, but I think we should extend an apology to the officials that came down especially for the meeting. it's no longer needed. We have wasted their time today. Just as a courtesy, that's all. Thank you. Yes, yes.
Agreed.
Okay. Equally agrees. May we therefore, GG, I think you will convey that particular message on our behalf, on the members from your team, who I think Jorgen was telling, Dr. Jorgen Bilay was saying that you caught the 6 a.m. flight, which is when I was a soldier, there used to be a guard hour of 2 to 4. We used to call Kill My Heart because it was a terrible hour. When you're just about to sleep, you wake up to go and guard. When you're about to get your sleep again, the bell are ringing at 5 o'clock to wake up for the roll call again. So our apologies for that inconvenience, DG, to your team as a whole. May we request you to convey our apologies there. Having agreed, I think all political parties agreed to that. May we therefore now you guide us, DG, to the people now. We did get the presentation, a slide presentation on the Tobacco Products Amendment Bill. I'm hoping members have brought their copies. And there were a number of questions that were being posed by members, I think as a consequence of the presentation. May I just maybe for ease of information say we will have, I think we will have to ensure that we deliberate on this in a particular way. There was a question asked as to that there was no clarity as to how we actually publicized the calls for submission from the members of the public as a whole. Let me just remind both members of the committee and the public at large that I think the bill was published in the Government Gazette on the 29th of February. 29th of February, the bill was published in the Government Gazette. I think there's a reference number to that. And then Parliament referred it to the committee on the 7th of March. 29th of February in the Gazette, 7th of March, referred to the committee. And then I think we tabled in our meeting here, and having tabled our meeting, we then agreed that we must then call for the, rather advertise for submissions from the public. And it was advertised in the Sunday Times, in the City Press, in the Sowetan, and in the Weekend Argus. I think those are the four papers, I think, Weekend Argus is on Saturday and Sunday, no? Sunday Times is on Sunday. City Press is on Sunday, and the Sowetan is on. It's weekly. It's weekly, and then the chairperson of the portfolio committee. Was then on the SABC view from Parliament on the 12th of March. So I think just for reference, I think that program is the national broadcaster. And I think those are the dates. I think one of the problems, and I'm sure it's an administrative issue, we ourselves maybe, especially the committee section that deals with these issues. Normally when they publish this advert, not just in the health portfolio committee, but in all parliamentary processes, they always take them to the business section. So if you have read the Sowetan, or rather not the Sowetan, the City Press and the Sunday Times, these adverts are always in the business section. To what extent are people reading these business sections, we don't know. They don't publish them in the area where news is. And I'm saying that it's something beyond our own control, but I think it's an objective problem. We ourselves as a board must interact with the editors who actually deal with these issues, because they get a lot of money out of these adverts, but they put them where it's difficult for ordinary people to go and give. How many people have got an interest in the business section? Very, very few. People, I think it's an objective problem that we will need to understand. So I just wanted to highlight that, and even further saying the 29th of February, it was an explanatory summary as required in the specific section of the Rules of Parliament, I think 2413, I think somewhere it was quoted by one people that actually published this particular, not just the bill as a whole, but the explanatory thing that actually published. Now, having clarified that, I think we will then have had all those things. I would like to suggest, I do know that there are a number of legal views that were actually raised by people. I think there was a legal opinion, not legal, legal query rather, raised by the Tobacco Institute of South Africa, which we have circulated, I think state law advisors, parliamentary law advisors, the department, and members of the committee received the views there. There was something else, I think, from Zepa Wenzel, legal people. I think I haven't received that copy, but I think it was received by the parliamentary committee. Now, I think I don't want us to really expend a lot of time on those legal issues, because we'll have time to deliberate when we actually go into the substance of the submission. And then maybe various stakeholders may make their views about this, and we will respond to some of them. But I would have thought, I'm not sure, maybe state law advisor or parliamentary law advisors may want just to comment on this, just in a very brief way as to their views on the issues that are there. But the substantive responses, I'm sure the department might have had time to look at the TISA submission on the legal opinion and others. I would suggest rather we deal with those things when we deal with the bill itself and the public hearing. And then we'll be able to deliberate there and respond adequately to the issues. But if maybe there are any immediate things, the state law advisor, parliamentary law advisor, you may want to respond to. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, everybody. I've been through the letter of Web of Ensel, and I'll confine myself, as you say, to the procedural aspects that you've raised, that you've mentioned, and they have raised certain concerns. I wanted to start out by saying that Rule 2411, which is the rule that applies to all legislation, is a compulsory rule. Rule 241, sub 2 and 3 are optional rules and falls outside the parliamentary process. Those are rules that if the department does one thing, then there are prerequisites. If they do another thing, there are prerequisites. So what I'm saying, only Rule 241 applies to all legislation, and 241C is what is relevant here. 241C requiring that an explanatory summary of the bill or the draft bill as it is to be introduced has been published in the Gazette. That must be done before introduction. So that's the only compulsory rule here. 2412, which Weber Rental relies on heavily, and then again tobacco industry, the British America Tobacco Letter refers to and supports this view, is not relevant here. 2412 applies when an actual bill is published before introduction and only applies to bills that will be introduced as it is. And this is also a provision that has fallen somewhat into disuse and is an option. And 2413 is an alternative option. But what I want to point out to the committee is that, in my view, all these requirements, 2411C, and the other relevant requirement in respect of the rules, which is 2491, have been adequately complied with. 2491 is the actual start of the process inside Parliament, and the constitutional obligation to ensure public facilitation is imposed on Parliament, and this is what we now concern ourselves with. So pre-introduction, I'm happy that we've complied with all the procedures, and now, as you've correctly said, Mr. Chair, there have been several advertisements placed out there, and that is what 2491 requires and envisages this committee to do.
I think that particular view, so as to settle us as we proceed in dealing with this, so that we know that we are not veering off the actual processes in dealing with the bill itself as presented in the way we want to present it. Honourable Waters?
Chair, just got a question for clarity. I hear what the parliamentary advisor is saying. So we're saying that due process was followed, that we're going to have public hearings next week then, I'll take it, Chair. And, but you know, point four of the letter that was sent to you last week, Chair, it says, furthermore, despite notification of the date on which public hearings will be held, the advert failed to provide any detail of how and where interested parties should lodge applications to participate in these hearings. Does that in any way affect our standing as far as the rules of Parliament are concerned? Let's get clarity on that. Thank you.
We'll settle the copy to members quickly. What the first more despite notification of the date on which RBA will be held, the advert fails to provide any details of how and where interested parties should lodge applications to build the This is the format of the advert.
The hearings will take place on Tuesday and Wednesday, 25 and 26, 208, at Parliament. Written submissions must be addressed to Secretary to Parliament of the Republic of South Africa, 2 Box 15, Cape Town, 8000, for attention for your calls in Matalamba. It must reach us by no later than Thursday, 20 March at 12 hours. Enquiries, Ms. Vuyokazi Matalamba, 021-403-3642, 021-FAX 3309, that is 403 again, email vmajalamba@parliament.gov.za, issued by LVJ Mulu, MP, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee. Is this not addressing the query?
So, Honorable Gwacha, would you be
satisfied with the response of the chair? Thank you very much. Okay, but we'll request maybe.
Clarify that at least this was the briefing by the department for the members to prepare the members to be able to sort of ask questions to the on the public hearing process when the public hearings are being held sometime during the course of the the passage of the bill. So it is specifically for members briefed by the department. And they ask questions to the department for clarity purposes so that they are well informed about the bill and be able to ask questions from the presenter during the public hearing. Thanks, Chair. I just wanted to clear that one.
Thank you very much. That's Colin Sam Joseph, Principal State Law Advisor, so that we know where the response comes. So, I think we've clarified procedural matters. Are there any other procedural matters that we may want to ask first before we come now to the substance of the discussion?
Just one question I had about the public hearings next week. Are we going to meet next week then for public hearings? And will we have a quorum, more importantly? Because there's no point in having public meetings if the majority of the members aren't going to be there.
I think I'll interact with the committee session. I did get your concerns about the problems of Tuesday next week. We'll interact and maybe we'll send due notices as soon as, before we arrive, I think, tomorrow. Okay.
Some people say doodly. That's easier for you. Can we get some idea of what kind of response we have? Is it enormous numbers of people wanting to present, or is it a few?
I think the.
No. So I mean, there's nothing surprising.
The only, I think so far, I think the correspondence rather that came were people just inquiring about procedural matters. We have not yet received substantive submissions on the bill itself, hoping that they are on the way. But I think it's more or less the issue that we're dealing with now, rather than the substantive inputs into the Tobacco Product Control Amendment Bill B7208. We hope, I think, having clarified all those processes, I think members from the public stakeholders will have enough time to make their submissions. I'm not sure if that satisfies you. Thank you very much. Any other questions, procedural? Any other questions? None. Thank you very much. Now, who was making the presentation, by the way? We are not here today.
Everyone is here.
Okay. Now, I think that
the rest of the substantive and other issues, perhaps we may be having time and maybe in a more in-depth way to deal with them when the submissions. I think as the schedule advisor was saying, we now want to familiarize ourselves with the issues of the bill. May I therefore invite members now to interact with the presentation that was given to us last week? Thanks.
My question is on the slide around the introduction, the first slide. There are some statistics there. Point two, it says about 42,000 people are killed by cigarettes each year. I'd like to know what research was done. How did one arrive at those figures? What is the substantive research that was done? Can that be quoted, please? And how did you arrive? You know, what was your sample?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. We would hold Chairperson because as a department, before I respond to that, because as a department there are certain allusions that are made to the department and its processes with regard to the letter that came from the tobacco industry. We would hope that at some point we would be given an opportunity, because we're not part of the public hearing, to actually put on record our views on some of the unfortunate and insulting statements that are in that letter. But to follow your procedure, Chair, on the question of the research, we can provide the Honourable Member with research that has been done in South Africa by the Medical Research Council, but we also can provide the Honourable Member with research that is actually done by the WHO on this matter worldwide. So these statistics come from World Health Organization figures, as well as MRC research that was done by that council a couple of years ago. So, and we can provide the actual references to the research.
The DG is taking me back. We should have indicated, because I was dealing with all procedural matters. Now, you are saying, you recall, members, I think there was a letter we circulated, I think this letter, I think that the DG is referring to this letter, am I right?
Yes, sir.
And I think there's a written response, am I right?
Yes, sir.
I think the committee session is making copies.
Yeah.
It will mean, I think, what do I allow you to respond now? I think so that at least we settle all these issues that may actually be misconstrued as unprocedural processes in the process of dealing with this deal. Having replied to this thing, we're coming back now to procedural matters, in other words. There was this letter that we circulated last week. We all have copies? Yes. Now, I think they will make copies for that. They should go to fetch other copies. It will mean now the DG must respond. He wants to respond to this issue. What is the point of order?
Chair, the letter's addressed to you. Shouldn't you be responding? Isn't that procedurally correct?
Yeah. Part of the people who are actually the initiators of the deal is the department. I've referred it and both to ourselves and the department as the state law advisor. And they are now presenting this response to the chair, and the chair is actually presenting to yourself what is for all our information. So I think I'm in order. I think in allowing all of us, unless you want me to keep it to myself, I can do that.
May I raise a point of order, Chairperson? Is this the platform for the department to raise to defend itself here? Because last week the DG stated that it was a legal matter and he would handle it in a legal way. I'm not so certain that the Portfolio Committee on Health is the platform for the department to defend itself now. We've addressed it, and the letter was circulated to us. We've addressed our concerns to you, and the legal department has, the Parliament's legal department has clarified the issue. I think over and above that, the department must now take its battle outside of the Portfolio Committee. We are here to exercise oversight role, not to listen to, you know, each side of the story.
Very difficult for the chair, because I would have thought the bill originates from the Department of Health. I'm sure we all understand, but I think the originators of the bill is the Department of Health. There were issues raised by the British American Tobacco in terms of this particular briefing and making, for lack of a better word, I think what the DG was saying, there were certain allegations on the consultation processes, certain opinions raised about the department in terms of how it interacted with some of the issues. And I was of the view, therefore, a number of issues. I'm sure all of us have had time to read this letter. I don't really want to take you back to it. I was thinking that the chair is now allowing unless we are saying he must not respond now, he responds next week. But it's going to, again, we've clarified some of the legal processes. I think the state law advisor, the parliamentary law advisor, they clarified now. And I think we're all in the same wavelength in terms of the process thus far. And that, I think, we're still on the right footing in terms of the processing there. And the DG may want to clarify this issue. And the chair was allowing him to make any comments. Unfortunately, it's written. It is going to be circulated to yourself. And thereafter, we actually deal with the letter he raises and ask questions on it. And then maybe from there, I think we must then outline the submission process and how we're going to deal with it and come back maybe to the question as raised by Honorable Waters in terms of when are we going to meet, et cetera, et cetera. Can't we allow the DG to really make a request, Honourable Members, please?
Look, the chairperson, I don't want to be obstructive, but if the department responds and now the other side wants to respond, it's going to be a he said, she said thing. Then you must give equal opportunity to the other parties to also say what they want to say. This is now apart from the public hearings. If the Department of Health is going to respond to those allegations in the letter and there's going to be a counter response, then in order to be fair to everybody, you have to allow that. If that opportunity arises, the legal opinion is coming.
But you ask a question. Why do I have the consultation process? I want to answer this now. Why are you not allowing me to answer that question?
Chair, in the interest of assisting the committee, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Why do they want to ask a question and not want to respond?
No, I think the chair is wiser now, having had a number of consultations. May I reiterate the point one has raised, and I think it was further, I think, strengthened by the members when we're actually dealing with this particular process. We were saying, this is now, I think, we said we're clarifying certain procedural issues, and all of them agreed those procedural issues from the state law advisors and the parliamentary law advisors, that the processes thus far, both on the committee section, parliament, cabinet, have all been followed. Therefore, the bill is duly presented to the Portfolio Committee on Health to deliberate on. Having been duly presented, we then had an opportunity, what we call in our parlance, informal, what do you call it? Informal briefings, which we had last week. And the chairperson was clarifying that those informal briefings were handicapped by time. And thus today we're continuing with those informal briefings to look at these content issues. This is no time now to look at the content of submission, either by the department or by other stakeholders on this particular issue. That's why you will see, even in the letter that has been circulated to us, it only addresses those specific issues that indicate whether we are duly right to sit in this committee and deliberate on the bill. And we've all clarified those issues. And I think it will not therefore be in order for the chair to allow the DG to respond on this particular issue. We're not dealing with the content issue. So I think the point by Honorable Cullen, I think, is valid in the concern that she was actually raising. What will then happen, I think, we've had the responses from the department, the responses, the letters from the TISA, and now there's a letter from DAT. The lawyers, both from the parliament and the state, will actually be looking at those issues and the department responses to it. When we now deliberate on all those few issues, we'll then be in a position to look at all of them now. This is no time now to deal with all those issues. May I invite you once again, if members have got questions on the content of the informal briefing by the Department of Health. If you allow me, DG, therefore, I think I'm not overruling you, but I'm saying that we will have the time to deal with it at the right moment. This is not the moment for it now. I must always ensure that I follow things in a particular way, and I don't want to debunk my processes. And I think your cooperation in this regard is always very much important to all members. Thank you very much, Honorable Kalyan. Thank you for guiding us in the right direction in this regard. May I invite members to ask questions on the bill? Thank you very much, Honorable Waters.
Chair, just on the slide 16 on the presentation from last week, it says manufacturers and importers of tobacco products will only be allowed to make charitable donations anonymously. That goes against the FICA rules. How do you envisage getting around that? You know, you've got to declare what donations you give to organisations, and they have to declare who they receive donations from. How do you envisage getting around that? Then on slide 18, it says sales of tobacco products in health and educational institutions must be prohibited. Reason: hospitals cannot both treat diseases and sell products that causes the disease in the first place. And it says alcohol is not sold in either hospitals or technicons. Well, alcohol is not sold, but it's served in hospitals. We all know that. And also, the educational institutions, I mean, they do, obviously in the pubs, they do sell alcohol. I mean, you know, so I think you should just look at the start of the presentation. But you know, I'm just saying, are we going to be looking at legislation down the line banning alcohol from campuses and hospitals as well? Thank you.
No, that's okay, Chair. No, thank you very much, Chair. On the question of the let me start with the alcohol in hospitals. It's not sold, and therefore, it's depending on what alcohol we're talking about, the medicinal alcohol, and there's also alcohol in the form of the of liquor that we use, and we still. The Honourable Member agrees with us that alcohol is actually not sold in the hospitals. In fact, we must ensure that it actually is not even given out in those hospitals unless it's from medicinal use. That's what we would want to actually say to that one. So it's clearer with regard to that. With regard to educational institutions, I do agree with the Honourable Member that as you go higher, at a higher education level, you'll find that there are certain restricted areas, clubs, pubs, where alcohol is sold. But I mean, in relation to the tobacco part of it, we would want to make sure that those places do not promote or market tobacco to those people in the manner in which the bill is intended. So the issue of alcohol in that area is actually neither here nor there. So the issue would be what we are trying to deal with regards to tobacco products. I think the other question, of course, in relation to the FICA rules, I don't know if our legal people would want to comment on that, because I think it's a legal matter. My own sense is that you still can actually keep the identity of the donor. You can still keep it unknown, except for FICA purposes, to record that so under certain sections. So I don't think there would be a problem with that, but that's a legal matter that we'd have to look into in detail. But my understanding is that it's not in contravention of, because people do want to continue donating anonymously, except they'll be able to declare that it's anonymous, and this is the contact details of whoever was anonymous who made the donation. And so the sort of FICA rules can kick in that people can investigate and see whether that was a genuine donation, without necessarily the revelation of the individual or the group that actually made the donation. So there's no contradiction between the two in our view. I don't know if there's any comment on that. No. Okay.
I'm sorry, I think this particular point on donation and anonymity, we'll have to deal with it further again. I may have my own questions around it in terms of its practicality, but I think the response thus far suffices. But I think there may be, I'm sure we'll have to look at it. I'm just thinking, but I think what tying clarities now, but there may be certain questions. I think as you say, maybe both, maybe from the treasury accounting procedures, this is your donation to X, and yet it's anonymous. How do you control your books, etc.? But I'm sure we'll find time to deal with those issues at some point, because the Companies Act may make certain prescriptions. We will make certain prescriptions ourselves. The Company Act has been amended now, and is making more onerous responsibilities, especially to directors and others, in terms of its own accounting process. So we'll have to maybe to come back to those things at some point. Honorable Madumise.
I just want my mind to be clarified on this issue. How do we compare the technicons? I understand about the hospitals, but the technicons with a place like the institute that we are in now, in the premises of Parliament, where alcohol cigarettes are being sold. And as lawmakers, we are saying we don't have to sell it to other people. And yet, in this institution, we have alcohol and
thank you very much.
Chair, I leave that to the conscience of the committee.
Thank you very much. Any other questions?
Chair, we are restricting our questions to the presentation from last week, not to the bill, eh? The whole bill. Informally. Okay. Well, I've got another question on slide 23, where it says the sales of cigarettes through the post, internet, and electronic media is prohibited. Such sales are difficult to monitor and promote evasion of excise tax duty payments. Now, is this not a trade and industry matter? And if you could just explain, you know, have you had discussions with the Department of Trade and Industry about this, and, you know, are they on board? And secondly, because it's not in the preamble of the bill, it doesn't mention anything about excise tax duty payments at all. It's not part of the preamble. So just wondering, where does it fit in? Thank you, Chief.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. First of all, just to assist the Honourable Member, there are different interests from different departments on a number of issues. For example, when it comes to issues of custom, the DTI has interest in so far as those matters relate to issues of the DTI. We have an interest in matters that are related to environmental health and health products and related issues. And similarly, the Treasury will have its own interest in terms of tax collection, SARS and revenue, et cetera, et cetera. So let's establish that as a principle first, that this matter will be what we are raising there. If that was our concern that we are trying to deal with, the issue of ensuring monitoring, then that would be a DTI issue. But in this particular context, that is actually meant to justify and to explain why we need this particular clauses that we have put in there, precisely because of the difficulties that you have in the processes that were outlined in that particular slide. So it's not to say that we are now taking the responsibility of the DTI. We are not. We are taking our responsibility precisely because of the problems that we are identifying in that particular slide. But I think you've put a related question, which is to say, how have we engaged? And I think that question has been asked before. Chair, we would like to put on the table here for people, for the members of the committee, and for other people also to understand that government, as the executive, works in various collective ways. I, for example, chair the social cluster. I'm a member of the economic cluster of government. And if I say this matter has been submitted to the social cluster, I can list almost 18 to 22 departments that are members of the social cluster. Similarly, if it has actually been canvassed with the economic cluster, all those departments will be there. Cabinet consists of all these departments, honorable members. And so when a matter is put in front of cabinet, there's a minister of the DTI, there's a minister of the Treasury, et cetera, et cetera. And they, as cabinet, approve that this bill goes forward on the basis that they've engaged with the issues that interest them as such in relation to this. If they don't, they will say, we are concerned as the Treasury, can we have a bilateral on the matter, both at the level of DGs and at the level of cabinet. So first and foremost, let's understand that this is a bill, or any bill actually, comes from a cabinet process, and all those ministers are involved in that, and they actually go through this process. Nevertheless, with the departments that you're talking about, SARS, DTI, and so on issues of customs, we work together with a platform of the security cluster that works on these issues. And this bill is one of the discussions that we have had in that security cluster to discuss what are the implications. In fact, some of the issues that relate to their preparation for enforceability. The SAPS, for example, has been actually working with us preparing for enforceability issues that arise for the SAPS. Similarly, SARS has done the same. So we have actually consulted widely on this matter, as widely as possible. But even if we hadn't sat with the individual department, no bill will pass the cabinet process without actually the ministers that are there interested in their own interests and how it impacts on their issues and responsibility areas. They'll send it back. So the fact that the executive approves for the bill to be tabled to the legislature means that they've satisfied themselves with everything that is actually involved there. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to find out as to whether this is the same with the markings on the pegs, where the minister is specifically authorized to regulate what goes on the markings, not the finance or the trade and industry minister.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think that is true. The Minister of Health, for health methods that are in the labeling, would have the responsibility. That's what the bill gives. In fact, it's already there. And therefore, the responsible minister may consult with the other minister, and that other minister may say, look, I think this is not workable. It will create this problem, until they agree. And therefore, the responsible minister for health messages, and this is the health message that we're talking about, would be the Minister of Health. And the other ministers have been involved in the decisions around ensuring that that happens. It's the same thing with the labeling of alcohol, which is the bill that you've looked at.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd like to ask the DG about the FCTC. First of all, does this protocol, or what you call it, warn governments to avoid engagements with the tobacco industry? Second of all, we've ratified it. South Africa has ratified it, all right? Now, with the passage of this bill, what provisions in the FCTC will be complied with? Are we kind of in a hurry to do it so that we meet with the deadline, which I believe is November, or there's a conference or something around it, and I'm not fully informed of that. Thirdly, what are the financial implications of this bill? Because according to this, according to this, you say that there will be positive financial implications for the state. What does that mean? What is the cost to state? Because here you are referring to the prohibition of duty-free and tax-free sales of tobacco products. Now, I didn't think that that was in the content of the bill, but I could be. I thought it's not here anymore, but I could be corrected by you. Would you give clarity to the committee on that, please?
Thank you very much, Honourable Member and Chairperson. Honourable Members, first of all, let me say that the processes of the FCTC have been taking place parallel to this bill being developed since 2001. If you remember, this bill was introduced, and we say so in the letter, as early as 2001, 2002. And the pause around perhaps not moving faster at that stage was because it was at the stage in 2004, I think, when the FCTC was also meeting to finalize the members were meeting to finalize the content of the FCTC so that we could actually then see whether there was some kind of a need for us to add or subtract as an outcome of the FCTC, and that has actually been finalized now. So it's not like we're chasing the FCTC. That process was taking place even as we were introducing the bill. Mm-hmm. The only thing we did was to actually say, let's pause and see what the outcome of that process, so that we can be able to ensure that our bill is in line with that particular process. And the bill as it stands is in line with what we have ratified as a country, which we have to comply with. Of course, we have to show leadership, I mean, and commitment. In fact, we do. If you look around now, countries like Britain, the UK, and in fact France, are only beginning now to actually get into the legislative processes that we as South Africa have been pioneering. And because we are leaders, we have a particular moral position around this particular issue, and we don't shy away from that responsibility. And that's why again, when we said we would like to host as a country the next conference of parties, which is taking place in November, the bill has nothing to do with that event. It's just that we happen to be hosting it because we requested and it was approved and we're hosting it. It would be very nice if the country can celebrate a further step in the tobacco in the tobacco products control, as we have that conference. But it's not triggered by that conference, because this bill was introduced long before we knew that we would ever have that conference in South Africa in 2008. So the November date has no relevance directly to the bill. It's not influenced by that, because the bill came separately from that process. Now, with regard to the question the honourable member is asking, I can give a broad answer, but I'm sure during the interactions and the public hearings, and we will see different groupings, and one of them will be the MRC, and we'll request them to actually do a detailed analysis of the cost benefit in relation to the bill. What we are saying is that there are a whole range of things. I mean, on the one hand, you can look at the cost, as other people will do, the financial cost of administering the bill. But what they don't say is how does the actual success of that administration of the bill save the state from dealing with all the consequences of tobacco in the population that we actually have. For example, the issues that relate to a whole range of impact issues with regard to tobacco, from cancer to death to deformed children to all sorts of things that actually come out of that process, to organ failures and issues like that. So you have to actually look at, on balance, we believe that the state would save more from that kind of process. But if we would like to see the comparative figures and the details, then we'll ask the expert to actually do that expert analysis and present the actual figures during the public hearing and such. But the broad statement that we're making is that one. It's not simply in relation to duty free, but it's in relation to the broader issue. Yes.
Thank you very much. Are we not saying that I think the presenter and I think the where we deal with the object of the bill, were we not saying that the purpose of this bill is to bring it in line with FCTC, FCTC, as well as to close loopholes? Honorable Mashiko?
Chair, through you, can we have just one additional?
Just one addition to that, Chair, what Honorable Kaelin asked, the first question she asked about the FCTC warning states not to interact with the tobacco industry. In fact, on the contrary, the FCTC encourages states to interact with the tobacco industry. But what it warns against is to have legislation and policies that are drafted by the tobacco industry. But they certainly encourage, because we feel, and there's a general feeling globally, that the more we can interact, the more we can resolve the issue of tobacco amicably and with better economic returns than if we take a very combative approach towards each other. So it does, the FCTC does not warn against interaction. It encourages interaction with the tobacco industry, particularly for those countries where tobacco industry is the mainstay of their economy, and the poorer countries. There is actually a whole article, a clause in the convention that is dealing with how to replace tobacco as a mainstay of the economy and yet promote something else which will be either better, which will be the same or better in terms of economic returns for those countries. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. The issue of the point of sale has it considered all the points of sale that are in the township and where people sell what they call loose draws and all, or is it restricted to the known institutions only? Thank you, Chairman.
Chairperson, with regard to that question, it has actually considered all those places. We would hope that individuals in our township, taverns and shebeens and those places would also take heed of this legislation, because it's enforceable among them too. If you look at the current situation where you have just an enforcement on liquor that you can't sell to people below the age of 18, that is the law of the land that affects everybody. We know that there are problems in some of our townships that people continue to do this thing, and we try to eliminate them, and the community must also be an enforcer. Here we believe that there is an imperative as well as an incentive, I think, on the side of the community to actually enforce this kind of thing. In fact, this bill and the bill that is actually before this one, which this one is amending, actually have empowered people to be able to say no to tobacco without calling the police. If somebody here in this house would pick up a cigarette, as it used to happen before, and start smoking, you'll see how many people would actually object. And that's because they've been empowered by our law. So enforceability comes from the community itself, and I'm sure even in those points of sales, one will have this bill, the enforcing of that bill will come from the community themselves. Long before we have the police, and it's not like it's Carter where we say, Nangama Poisa Fisha. This time there won't be any Fisha.
I'm wasn't unfortunately here. I was with the Education Committee last week, so I'm not wanting to tangle with the presentation. But before you finish, I'd just like to go back to just the hearing situation, if we could do that.
Okay, we'll come with you. And I'm sure this one of the loose one, I'm sure when we deal with the bill, I'm wary of passing a bill that will be difficult to implement. It's very easy to monitor the sale of liquor to under 18. I'm sure all of us, we know township life. To prohibit the loose fags in the township, I think this refiller's point is going to be very valid. It's going to be very, it can be good we put it in the bill, but the policing aspect of it will be well nigh impossible to do. So we'll have to look at that maybe. Whether we'll either need to strengthen it or do what, I don't know. But we'll have to apply one man very carefully when we deal with the substance of the bill itself. But I'm just taking my quick scan in the township life, you know. It's going to be very tough. Honorable, my Dumis?
Yes, thank you, Chairman. Once on that, I would like to refer you to slide 20. The first paragraph, that the minister shall be able to prescribe minimum package sizes. What does that mean? And how many cigarettes will be in that minimum package?
Honourable member, at the moment, we're just introducing an enabler for the minister to prescribe the minimum package size. And the intention, of course, is to deal with this issue of loose cigarettes. But the extent to which we can say at this stage what would be that minimum, I wouldn't, as long as it's actually not less than 5. It's not loose. It's actually 20 in minimum size. Now, But you see, the issue really, I mean, it gives me an opportunity also to comment on the chair thing. You see, one of the things that we also I want to emphasize in relation to this particular bill is to say the enforceability. This is an enabler for the individuals and the community to enforce, so that if it's able to protect certain people from smoking, then that's the success. Even if you have 10 of those people that would, as a result of the fact that you are not selling those cigarettes, are not smoking anymore. That's a very important thing from our part. So that's part of the debate that should be undertaken, as you just said.
Okay.
Can we ask if there's been any specific studies done that we could look at in terms of what the rationale is there? Because obviously, just to our naked eye, it looks like it's really going into small detail that's going to, as you say, be impossible to deal with, and just probably an area we shouldn't get into, and we should focus more on the really the bigger possible things. But if we've got studies we can look at, it might help you.
Okay.
We'll get the studies. There are studies that have been done. But or maybe the point to make, Chair, is that, remember, our primary focus group is children. And it has been proved over and over again that affordability for children is a good deterrent. So if you sell in packages, less likely that children can access the cigarettes. And if you break them loose, then they can be able to buy one cigarette at a time. So that is where the ways. Now there are studies are there. The studies are there, and they can be presented here.
We don't disagree, Ms. Matau, on the point you are raising. But I'm saying that a spaza shop in Brown Farm in Philippi, where policing itself is very difficult, and they sell one loose one for 150. May be a difficult thing to implement in practice. The spirit is there, we agree. But we are saying that. But in the little corner in this township, in Sobantu, Watambuza, Kubuledu, I think it's going to be very, very tough. I really want to be very frank with you. Let's not cheat ourselves here. It's going to be very tough with you. There is to open it and one cigarette, 150, and make my killing. In villages, it's happening. That's where people make their killing. You know? So, but I really want to, I think let's be very practical, because we come from these areas. We know what's happening. Yeah.
Chair, I think we do agree. We do agree. We don't think it's going to be easy either. We never thought it was going to be easy. But I think as the DG made it very clear that here, our weapon is going to be the community itself. And I have read many, many times here in Cape Town where the communities stand up in arms against the sale of drugs. And if that kind of spirit were community policing, not the police, we are very wary of the fact that our policing system is still too weak to cope with this kind of thing. But it is the communities on whom we shall be relying for this kind of thing. And as I say, I personally feel very encouraged by the way I have seen people react against sale of drugs in the very townships we come from.
I won't argue it, but I would invite you to go to Mitchell's Plain. Just take a round now to the schools. You'll be surprised. Just one drug now, as I'm talking. Now, I just go to Mitchell's Plain now, or go to Bok Makiri. You'll be surprised. That's why the Western Cape government is putting 15 centers on some of these drugs, now it is happening. You see this chap sitting next to the gates of the schools, just across the fence. It's a big problem.
But we don't make them legal.
Yes?
We don't make them legal
But I'm saying that the practicality, drugs is illegal, it's even worse. Cigarette is legal. If it's difficult for the police to do that with drugs now, that's why we've got the tech problem in the Western Cape. When cigarettes are legal, we are just trying to discourage young ones to enter, to start the first fake. You know, it's going to be very tough. So all what I really want to sit here and preside over a bill that at least some of them will make me comfortable that I'm not doing something that in real life is not going to be practicable. So, but it's something I think we must invite further interaction as we deal with these things. Honorable Watson.
Chair, I'd like to know from the department, what are you going to do to educate outlets that sell cigarettes to not to sell under 18s and not to sell, you know, single cigarettes? Do you have envisaged a program of education or not? And, you know, and if not, who do you envisage will be doing it? Then just on, I'm looking forward to the DG's presentation, Chair, on the saving to the state regarding these new regulations, as when you answered Honourable Callion's question, and also the first question Honourable Callion asked you about, where did you get to the 42,000 deaths per year? Because I think that, you know, I think it'll arm the committee a lot on what we will be saving to the state, and I think it's extremely important that we get those statistics. I look forward to that. My other question is, and it's a bit of a difficult one, I think, is as far as advertising is concerned. Now, you don't have to convince me about the pros of restricting advertising. That's what my question. My question is, by doing so, you are entrenching the monopoly that British American Tobacco has in the industry and not allowing the other competitors. If you know what I mean, I don't know if you understand where I'm coming from. So I understand why you want the restrictions in advertising, right? But by doing that, you're going to entrench a monopoly. Do you see a problem with that or not?
No, thank you very much, honourable members. On the last question, you know, you're sitting here at the Department of Health, and your concern is the health of the nation. And so, do you sit and say, well, let's allow equitable distribution of the impact of our people on disease by ensuring that there's no monopoly? That's not the starting point of the health department. If we start from the premise that this is a health hazard and we must actually deal with the health hazard, the consequence of that may lead to one group actually being entrenched as a monopoly. But let's hope in future we'll be able to advance further such that we do not have that, because in the end, we would want to see alternatives to the tobacco industry. That's what our commitment is. The convention is we would want to ensure that those developing countries that are dependent on tobacco actually find alternative things to do rather than that. So, I mean, from a health point of view, we don't see any problem with that, because that's not what we are promoting. It would be a problem if we were to say, as a result of that, let's have equitable distribution of harm to our people. That I think would be illogical from our health point of view. So that's the one. And as I say, even though the studies won't be presented by ourselves, but what we are saying is we'll ask some of the participants that actually, like the MRC, because it did the research, to come and present that research in the public hearing. And so on. That's what we are saying. Indeed, our program has always gone with an education program from the time we introduced this tobacco bill and even before. But of course, there are targeted groups that would have to go to in relation to this bill, as it actually introduces certain elements. And we are going to be looking at our education program to ensure that people are, first of all, informed about what the bill intends to do and what they are supposed to do, including children, by the way. We'll educate them more about what they are able to say to their parents in their cars, you see, when these kinds of things happen. So we will continue with the education program.
In fact, that slide that talks about the sizes and the loose ones, for me, the emphasis could have been the strong emphasis on the education, it could have been the stronger section than just the enforcement part of it. Something that maybe the people must look into when we deliver it. Because education, to me, would be more important than always to look at the enforcement part of it. But also maybe the savings, don't you think also the reduction of unhealthy people is a saving to the state in the long run. Thank you very much, Honorable Dudley.
You're talking to the convinced already, so you're trying to be very unbiased. But the thing is, now the health department obviously has inspectors that would inspect places in terms of health. Will this mean that there will be an added sort of side to those that department where inspectors will go to inspect so that they can check on this legislation? I mean, how is that going to impact on the department? Is there going to be an avenue? Because if we're saying here as a department that certain things can't happen at the point of sale or whatever, is the department going to have the capacity to investigate those or at least inspect those things?
Well, two things that perhaps one can say about that. One is we must really emphasize once more that we believe that this particular bill is one empowering bill for the community out there. The community, in fact, you and I, are better inspectors for those kinds of points of sales. But secondly, there are the structural arrangements that are coming into play. For example, we have a discussion in the broader scheme of things about whether we should be establishing a tobacco institute in the country, in South Africa, whose function would be both research and ensuring that we find out information about what is happening with this bill and other things that relate to tobacco, so that we can be able to know where the weaknesses, where the gaps are, and so starting from the premise of just getting informed about what is the behavioral pattern in general, in here and elsewhere, and actually sharing experiences with other countries in relation to these matters. In fact, you can see, I mean, as a South African, you get into any other country now that still has the kind of environment of tobacco that we don't have. You just feel alien yourself in relation to that those countries. So that kind of experience about how would also help us in the enforcement, because that kind of institute, independent, research-oriented, but also acting as a kind of enforcement without having the authority to enforce, by bringing to the fore what is the behavior of certain groups, what is happening to certain people. Because we've done that with restaurants, for example. We ourselves have gone to restaurants and refused to continue to sit in that restaurant until it actually does 1, 2, 3. And we've raised a lot of issues with many restaurants, and they have modified their behavior as a result of that. So we don't have a specific unit that will be the inspectorate, because we're not a law enforcement agency. But we enforce our laws through other means, you know, and refer to the law enforcement agencies as a result.
That takes us to the end of questions. Thank you very much. Now, what we want to suggest, I'm sure we've read the advert to the members. It says written and oral submissions. I really want to emphasize around this question of the oral submissions, because sometimes when we say written, that's a standard form of parliament submission, but people will say, this is my written submission, and if you want to then come and appear before the committee, you indicate, and then we have the schedule of the people to appear and then set up the program, which we circulate amongst ourselves and the documentation. So I think members of the public are again encouraged if they want to come for oral submissions to do so, and refer, I think, to Ms. Fuyoka Azimachalamba, as we said, in terms of the advert as I was outlining. So if people want to make any written submissions and oral submissions, just indicate. We will have enough time, as we normally do, to ensure that we dedicate enough time to interact with all the submissions that come before us. So don't feel handicapped in any way in doing so. There's a request here that says that next week, Monday, is the Easter Monday. It would seem some members are saying they may not be able to come back on
Tuesday because of the Easter Monday. That takes away another day in our busy schedule. But I think may we all agree that we are not meeting on Tuesday? Given I've seen, I think almost all political parties were coming to me to say Tuesday will be a problem. So it will mean we're going to skip next Tuesday and meet that other Tuesday. The following week. Or we can meet on Wednesday. We'll have to make a special request to committee section. Honorable Dudley?
On that point, some of the concerns that were brought up, obviously the advert was on the 9th and the deadline's the 20th. That's like a 10-day period, and effectively it's probably 6 working days. And we know the cost to Parliament when there are court challenges. So we're looking at quite a thin line there with that 6-day period, especially in view of the kind of court judgments we've had with Doctors for Life and whatever. So although I would like to see personally this happen quickly, what we wouldn't like to see is things being held up with a court process and huge expense. So is it not wiser that we actually don't push it in on the one day of next week and whether it's just another week's grace for that deadline? Or whatever, that we just put us on safer ground in terms of a court challenge.
We can meet next week, Wednesday and Thursday, because I mean, it's only committees that are going to meet.
That's not my problem. Explain. That's not my problem. My problem is that if it goes before a court and they talk about 6 actual days to put together certain complicated presentations and to get them back to Parliament. If that should have been 2 weeks of working days, we'll be on stronger ground than if we unless they are judging us on having given the public 6 working days to put submissions to.
I agree with the Honourable Dudley. Can we just get some advice from the Parliamentary Law Advisor regarding that issue? And cause I was under the impression you've got to get 3 weeks' notice. But, I mean, it's nothing ahead, so I'm wrong again. But, I mean, you know, if we could just be briefed on actually how many working days you've got to give people to submit submissions. Thank you.
African National Congress, there's a request made, I think the ACDP, the Democratic Alliance, that we skip the week coming then so that we give enough time for members of the public to come to make their submission, and we meet that other week and cushion us from any potential suits that may actually come on our way. ANC? ANC also agrees, so we'll interact. I think it will mean we're skipping the following week and week. So when are we meeting?
Thank you.
I think we've taken note of the request. I think it's quite reasonable. I think it will therefore mean, I think there's a recess. It's a pity Honorable Kalyan is not here. I think in April it will be recess. So it will mean we'll only meet here on the 6th of May and deliberate with the bill that in May that gives adequate time to people. Am I right? Because it was the 25th, we are not meeting. Unless we say we can meet on Wednesday. Wednesday and Thursday. But now we are saying that... Okay. We'll meet on the 2nd of May. Oh, 6th of May?
Yeah. We can meet the 7th and the 8th, which is the Wednesday and Thursday as well.
Yeah, we'll meet from the 6th of May.
Yeah.
Yeah? Alright? Okay, thank you very much. I think notices will go as the.
Can I just a question of clarity on the process through you? Chair, I'm not aware when Parliament rises this year, but I suspect that it might be rising earlier than usual because of the implications of what Parliament has to do, or parliamentarians have to do for next year. In which case, Chair, I was just checking whether there are no weeks in April where committees are meeting, or even the next one, because I'm concerned about the NCOP process that will also take a longer process in passing this bill. But I understand if that is not possible. Okay.
I don't think I feel much more than that.
there would be no surprise of the deadline from the timetable from here on in.
We'll speculate at something. By then, I think we'll speculate it with by then we're walking everyone in that campus camp for submission together with packages of members. Thank you very much for your time.
This lunch at 1?
Yes.
Lunch at 1 will be in the same room we're in, yeah. Thanks.
Joe will send them. There was just one problem.